This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The governor's office and a United States Senate seat will be at the top of the ballot next year in Michigan. It's a judgment call as to whether it's too early to discuss a report on the moves being made to try and win elections in 2018, but it clearly is not too early to raise money for next year's races. The Michigan Campaign Finance Network finds that fundraising committees for both the Republican and Democratic parties are raising lots of money. The Michigan Campaign Finance Network's director, Craig Mauger, joins us from Lansing. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And I don't think it's too early to start talking about the 2018 election because, everyone in the Capitol is already focused on that. So I don't think it's too early for the public to hear about it.
Well, let's begin then with how much money we are talking about here. What are the totals that we look at for the campaign committees for both the Republicans and the Democrats?
Yeah, so what we looked at is the first quarter campaign disclosures that the main fundraising committees of the four legislative caucuses had to turn in. So legislative caucuses here are the House Republicans, the Senate Republicans, the House Democrats, and the Senate Democrats. So these are four longstanding committees in Michigan who raise money to pour into competitive House and Senate races in the state, and they're usually the top spenders in these competitive races. For the first quarter of 2017, so this is January 1st through April 20th, not a lot of time, these four committees combined to raise $2.10 million, which is the highest total that they've reported over that time in an off year, a non-election year, dating back to 2007, and they narrowly didn't beat out the number from 2007 when it was 2.12, and in 2017 it was 2.10.
As of now, is there one party that has a distinct advantage over the other?
Yeah, as of right now, the Republican committees are really out fundraising their Democratic counterparts, which isn't surprising because the party in power tends to attract more donations to their caucus committees. The Republicans have control of the House and the Senate and the legislature, which gives them a leg up on fundraising. That may not have been the case as much in 2016 because there was a leading up to the 2016 election, a lot of people felt that the House Democrats were in a great position to make some gains and maybe even come very close to taking a majority. So a lot more donations tracked the House Democrats' way in the 2015-2016 cycle. This time, however, in the first quarter, you saw House Republicans report a major fundraising advantage. They raised $817,000, the House Republican committee did, over the first quarter. The House Democrats were down around $400,000 over that quarter. So that's a significant margin for the House Republicans.
I think back to 2007, that year you referenced where actually the record amount was raised. Mm-hmm. That was coming off a year in 2006 in which the Democrats almost took control of the state Senate and they had control of the state House. And then I think about what you said about competitive races. And it seems to me that there were probably more competitive races going from that 2006 to 2008 election cycle. With more money being raised, the same amount of money being raised now as 10 years ago, could we be looking at roughly the same amount of money, perhaps more if the pace picks up, being funneled into fewer races because they can focus with the analytics they have on, the few races that they think will be competitive?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what we've seen in Michigan over the past, past cycle since 2010. More and more money is being funneled to a smaller group of competitive races. So the 10 races that are the most competitive, attracting the most money, are getting larger and larger amounts each cycle. I think we had 7 or 8 races that went over $1 million for the state house in 2016 alone. So, I mean, that's a lot of money to be spent on a race that will fill 1 out of 110 seats in the state capitol.
But as I think back to those races that you highlighted, 3 of those were here in Southwest Michigan, and a couple of those might be close again. But I could also imagine, say, the 66th district not being as contested because the Republicans won it pretty convincingly in 2016. So could we be focusing even on a smaller number of races if you know, they take the 2016 election and look at those? Or could it be that maybe some other districts that didn't get attention last time are viewed by the parties differently this time around?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be, you know, about a dozen races where the money is focused, and as the election gets closer, it might go down from there. But if the House Democrats win this election, does roll around, and they have a better idea of what the trends are across the state, I mean, if the House Democrats feel they have a chance to take back a majority, which they would have to flip a lot of seats, the Republicans have 63 of the 110 seats, they're going to have to play in a lot of races to try to push that, to make a majority play. And the financial advantage that the House Republicans have right now is going to be a major potential problem for House Democrats. And House Democrats as well have been telling, you know, donors cycle after cycle recently that this is the year we're going to flip the majority. And cycle after cycle, they haven't really come that close to flipping the majority. So they've got to find a new argument, a new path to explain to their donors of this is the cycle that we can do it, and here's why. And that's the challenge that's before them. I mean, and that could be one of the reasons that the House Republicans had such a major fundraising advantage over the first quarter of 2017.
When we compare these numbers to 2 years ago, is it important to put in context that the state Senate is going to be up in 2018 and the state Senate was off the board for 2016?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the state Senate, the Senate committees are going to raise a lot more money over the next 2 years than they raised the previous 2 years because it's leading up to an election. The thing with the state Senate is that a handful of races will be really expensive, and there will be a lot of money raised for them. But across the general election map, you know, there's only a handful of races that could even be potentially competitive because of the way the districts are and the partisan breakdown of the districts. So it's really hard for the Democrats, who I think have right now 11 of the 38 seats, to say that we're going to make a majority play. So really their play is to try to pick up as many seats as possible, and they're going to play in a handful of competitive districts. I'm sure the seat over there in your area that Margaret O'Brien holds will be one that could see a lot of money flowing its way.
Very close in 2014.
Yeah,
as well.
And it was the most in 2014. It was close, and it was the most expensive state Senate race in the state's history.
So if we look at both parties right now, where could we say the money is coming from? Let's start with the Republicans.
Yeah, for the Republicans, we did a little summary. If you can go to our website to see more details. But their main caucus committees are raising money from some business executives, I would sum it up, as, and leadership PACs tied to their leaders. Tom Leonard and Arlen Meekoff have both dipped into their candidate committee or leadership PAC to make large contributions to the campaign already. There have also been a lot of interest groups, you know, like DT Energy, the Michigan Health and Hospital Association, some of these groups that are traditionally large donors, the Realtors Association, continue to give to these groups.
And how about for the Democrats?
For the Democrats, once again, you're seeing their leaders, you know, their leaders are funneling money back into the caucus committees at a large rate. The House Democratic leader, Sam Singh, chipped in a large amount for the House Democrats. The Senate minority leader, Jim Ananick, sent a lot of money the Senate Democrats' way. I mean, because these are two guys that donors want to give to because they have a lot of say in what the caucus is going to do over the next 2 years. And they've also taken money from some labor groups, the Michigan Education Association, the Michigan Regional Council of Carpenters, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. These are the groups putting money there on that side.
Do some contributors show up on the list for both parties?
Yeah, that happens quite often in Lansing. There are interest groups, and these tend to be the most powerful interest groups. The groups with the most money tend to give money to both sides because that's a really solid way to advance your policy. Your policies, the policies you want to see put in place, because if you have supporters on both sides, where's the opposition going to come from?
Greg, do we have two trends here that might be coming into conflict, and we'll have to see how they play out? And I'm thinking that for Republicans, there's momentum on their side in that they won the presidency and Michigan's electoral votes for the first time since 1988 in the last election. So they have, of course, won all the statewide offices now the last couple of election cycles. And they're trying to get maybe their last big breakthrough here, which would be to win a U.S. Senate seat, which they haven't done since 1994. Democrats, on the other hand, may be counting on the idea that the party that's out of power in the White House normally does better in midterm elections. So are those two things coming into conflict, and maybe are those two things persuasive arguments that can be used when making fundraising appeals?
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, I think on both sides of the aisle, there are some patterns that are somewhat going in their favor. And I think you touched on most of them. On the Republican side, the thing that they're going to be pitching to donors is, well, one, we have all the power. Let's give to try to keep this. And when you're in power, it's easier to raise money. And then two is the fact that Michigan has been trending a bit Republican. I mean, for Donald Trump to have won the general election in Michigan after GOP presidential candidate after GOP presidential candidate had lost, that's a positive momentum position for Republicans to be in. And I should throw in there as well, the Republican legislative committees have had so much success winning these races that's another quality pitch that I'm sure they're making to donors. On the Democratic side, like you said, the tendency in Michigan has been for a governor to hold that position for two terms, and then for the other party to win it the next time. So that's a really good point for Democrats to make to donors, and also Democrats are going to be all over whatever Donald Trump's polling numbers are. And no matter what your belief is in polling, that's the fact. If his favorability is low, they're going to be pointing that out over and over again as an example of the potential for them to have success.
So this money that has been raised so far, how can it be spent? Can it be given directly to campaigns? Can it be used for issue ads, independent expenditures?
This money that we're primarily talking about today from the four caucus committees is most likely going to spend directly in races on TV advertisements that tell you, TV advertisements with the candidate campaigns that tell you to vote for that candidate or to vote against the opponent. I mean, that's how the majority of this money will likely be spent, TV ads, radio ads, things like that, in competitive Senate and House districts. This money doesn't include independent spending that will happen in the election. There will be numerous groups that set up shop in Michigan for 2018 and drop large sums of money to try to influence these races. When we talk about comparing these numbers to 2007, that's the big difference. There has been an explosion of independent spending in Michigan elections since 2007, and that's going to drive the price tag of that election upward significantly. And that's why, you know, I'm expecting in our group that tries to track money in politics and shine light on it is kind of preparing for 2018, knowing that it could be an election cycle unlike any other in recent time because of having an open seat in the governor's office, an open attorney general position, open secretary of state position, and then these legislative races where the cost of them continue to go up cycle after cycle.
And we'll have to see if the U.S. Senate race turns out to be competitive and one that the Republicans do make a serious play for.
The U.S. Senate race, I didn't even touch on that, but this could be an extremely expensive race if both parties feel like it is one that they can win. And I think Republicans are most likely looking at it very closely right now and seeing what candidate they can recruit to see if they can make a serious play against Senator Stabenow. The Democrat, these U.S. Senate races are also getting more and more expensive every cycle. In 2016, we had the most expensive U.S. Senate race on record happen in Pennsylvania, and these are races that are drawing, you know, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars if they're close. These races devour TV time, TV advertising time if they're close. So if there is a close U.S. Senate race, batten down the hatches for your TV to be seeing a lot of political advertising next fall.
And one other possibility out there is that we could see one or more high-profile ballot issues make it before voters in 2018. There's a number of groups out there that plan to collect petition signatures. We don't know how successful they'll be at this point. But if you throw that into the mix, what could we be talking about, Craig, in terms of just sheer volume of money being spent on political advertising, et cetera?
I mean, it's really impossible to say what the final figure could be, because a lot of that's going to depend on the nature of the ballot proposal, right? If the ballot proposals are something that both have donors that want to support them and donors that want to oppose them, the cost of running TV ads for a ballot proposal, the cost of that campaign could be a combined $20 million. $30 million. One of these to watch is this redistricting ballot proposal, because that's a ballot proposal where there will be a side that would be interested in spending money in favor of it, and likely a side that would have a lot of money to spend against it, because this is something that could decide, you know, legislative races for years to come. I mean, for the future. So there will be a lot of money spent in opposition to it if supporters are able to get something on the ballot, and then the supporters would have to raise a lot of money to keep it going. Medical marijuana is another one where a lot of money would have to be spent to make that case to the public. The question is really how much money would opposition groups spend, and that remains unclear.
I want to go back again to the point that we've made about the different worlds that we're in since 2007, when it was really the last time we saw this much money raised by the campaign committees. A big event that happened in between 2007 and now is the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. How much will that drive what we see when we actually get to 2018 and our TVs are filled with political advertisements?
Yeah, I think in the U.S. Senate race, that's one where the Citizens United could have a major impact, where there could be an absolute flood of spending by independent groups taking money from corporations and labor groups, taking money from sources that are mystery corporations that we don't really know where the money to those corporations is coming from. That's one to watch, and that's one of the reasons why U.S. Senate races and U.S. House races have become more expensive than ever. And just overall, even without Citizens United, there has been an upward trend in independent spending by groups that can accept unlimited contributions because they're supposedly acting independently of the campaigns. And what we're going to see cycle after cycle as this spending increases is the cost of the elections go up, the money given to these campaigns go up, and the murkiness of the ability of the public to figure out where this money is coming from also go up. So all of those are factors that will play out, and that's something that will be on full display, I suspect, in 2018.
So if we're going to make an apples-to-apples comparison here, or as close as we can, and we look back to 2014, that's the last time there was an election for governor, attorney general, secretary of state, state senate. What does that election cycle look like compared to what we're seeing ahead of 2018?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from these very early numbers, the caucus committees are ahead of where they were at in 2014. According to our tracking, the total cost of the state elections in 2014 was $134.6 million. And just to put that number in perspective, of that $134 million, $63 million, you know, somewhat close to half of it, $63 million of that was from the race for governor. The race for governor in 2018, if it remains somewhat close, is going to be what drives up all these figures. It's what's going to dominate a lot of the TV advertising along with the U.S. Senate race if it's close. And it's the kind of race that will draw in donations from outside the state, will draw in donations by spending by independent groups. You talk about $63 million in 2014, that number could easily be surpassed in 2018 if the race is closed. And if it's an open seat. And keep in mind, in 2014, we didn't have competitive primaries for that race for governor.
On either side.
Both parties were settled on who their candidates were going to be. And as we look at the playing field for 2018, I think both parties are expecting somewhat competitive primaries that will also cost money. I think I talked to some campaign consultants earlier this year who were telling me that they thought a candidate for governor in a competitive primary race would need to raise about $3 million for that primary. So that will just drive the cost up even more.
There's also a debate going on in Lansing about insurance, basically for people with mental illness, developmental disabilities, those who need treatment for substance abuse. The Michigan Campaign Finance Network, as well as our public radio colleagues at Michigan Radio, have looked into where the money is in this debate. Craig, what did you find?
Yeah, this is a really significant debate that is complex, but it's an example of kind of the role the interest groups play in policy and how groups that are major campaign donors can also be pushing for very specific policy changes that can benefit their bottom lines. And I think the public has a general understanding that this happens, but it's really interesting to kind of look at a specific instance and where the money is on both sides of an issue. The state legislature is trying to decide what to do right now with its public behavioral health system, the kind of mental health system that goes along with the physical health system under Medicaid recipients. The physical health system is right now basically run by private health insurance plans, and the behavioral health system is run by a public system, public entities. And the state is looking at right now transitioning, integrating the behavioral health system with the physical health system, and a lot of the groups that are on the side of the health insurance plans are urging the state to do this integration under contracts with the health plans. These health plans have been major donors to politicians on both sides of the aisle, and majorly significant donors to state lawmakers who are having a lot of say in what's going to happen with this potential integration. We tracked over $1 million over 8 years from health plan connected donors to current state lawmakers, and a large portion of that has happened in the last year since this debate over integration began playing out.
And can we see patterns here where one side or the other seems to be funneling more money into this debate?
Yeah, the health insurance plans are by far outgiving people on the other side. When it comes to lobbying, the sides are a little bit closer. But when it comes to campaign giving, health plans with individual political action committees, the Michigan Association of Health Plans, which has two PACs, and individual executives tied to the health plans have by far outgiven the opponents on this issue. And their donations have often tracked to lawmakers who have sponsored amendments in their favor in this process, and to committee chairs and Senate and House leaders who will ultimately have the final say on what happens in this. And it's important to say, you know, we can't prove or say that there's any direct correlation between a campaign contribution and a legislative action, but it is important for the public to know where the money has come from over time to these lawmakers to see, to understand the relationships that are being built.
Craig Mauger, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Michigan Campaign Finance Network Director Craig Mauger joined us from Lansing. Links to the network's reports on fundraising can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.